Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode number 56 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today we are wrapping up our series on executive functioning skills with a doozy. Abby, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about the executive functioning area of emotion or emotional regulation, which is very, very common in individuals with ADHD to struggle with emotion regulation. But even with individuals that don't have ADHD, they may struggle with emotional regulation. To help us talk about emotion today, we have a very special guest with us. We've got Brooke Schnittman, who is an ADHD coach and is going to help us discuss more, learn more about this area and talk more about it and learn some tips and tricks for working with our weaknesses related to emotional regulation. So hi, Brooke. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We appreciate you being here. You know, what I find really fascinating too is that emotion regulation or the aspects of emotion regulation are not included in the DSM diagnosis, which is fascinating because it is such a huge part. So
it is fascinating.
We'll get into that a little bit more. Uh-huh. But first, Brooke, tell us a little about you. Tell us how you ended up working as an ADHD coach. How did you land in the world of ADHD?
Sure. So 2006, I graduated from NYU in Students with Disabilities. And previously, before that, I got my bachelor's in general education. And I started becoming a special education teacher the day after I graduated my master's and was a middle school special education teacher for about 7 years. Then I became an assistant director of special education for about 4 years. And I was working primarily with individuals with ADHD and learning disabilities. And I loved the difference that I made on them when I was in the classroom. Mm-hmm. When I was behind the scenes, of course, I didn't firsthand see the fruits of my labor. It was a lot of management, helping the bigger picture, but I didn't know at the time I had ADHD. And one thing about ADHDers is that it needs to be in front of you. It needs to be visual for you to, you know, see it. And I couldn't see it. So I ultimately decided to move to Florida from New York and start a career solo. I didn't know what it was. And through my own receiving coaching and my background in ADHD and networking, I actually met an ADHD coach down in Boca and she's like, you would be great at this. We had a similar background. So I said, sign me up. Tell me what I need to do. So over the weekend, I flew to Texas and did a 3-day intensive training for students and teens with ADHD. And I got my first 30 credits there. Then, of course, I went on with life coaching and parent coaching. And I started my business coaching with Brooke. I was the only coach at the time. And I initially worked with students. Then I really enjoyed working with adults. And I didn't know what it was at the time that I enjoyed it. I come to find out a year later that I have a lot of the same traits as these adults. So I decided to get an official diagnosis from a psychologist in Florida who works with individuals with ADHD, Dr. Stephanie Sarkis, and also was able to diagnose. And I passed that test with flying colors. I have ADHD combined type moderate. And I then found a husband who didn't know he had ADHD, but I was able to identify the symptoms and then he got diagnosed. And That's then awesome. my two stepsons were not diagnosed, and one of them was the hyperactive type, one of them is the inattentive type. So the hyperactive type was pretty obvious that he had it, but I'm like, the other one needs to really work with someone. So they both then got diagnosed with ADHD too. So we're a family of ADHDers.
Wow, your house must be a fun, fun place.
Exactly.
Oh, literally one of my stepsons bounces off the walls. I'm not kidding. It's fun.
It is fun.
It is
so
fun.
So you truly live it because you're living it at home. You're living it at work. You are living and learning.
I'm a living, breathing cult. Yes, creature of ADHD.
So when talking about emotion or the executive functioning area of emotion, how would you simply describe emotion and emotion regulation to our listeners? If you had to define it and describe it, how would you do that?
Yeah. So Dr. Thomas Brown has a model of executive functions with impaired and ADHD. So there's six separate clusters in that. There's activation, there's focus, there's effort, there's emotion, there's memory, there's action. And although those functions continuously work together using rapidly and unconsciously, it all works with emotions. So if you're trying to organize and prioritize and activate or focus and sustain your attention or modulate the effort, manage frustration and emotion, recall your working memory and monitor your action. All of that is emotion that you're dealing with. So if you're not able to do one of those in a way that you would like, our emotions are impacted. So even though emotion is just one cluster out of the six, it still spreads through all of them. So
makes sense.
I'm so glad that you went through those six because that's kind of the organization we've been following is based on Brown. And so we've been, we've covered initiation, activation, all that good stuff. So I appreciate that. And emotion is a huge one. And you're right. It is tied to everything because when you can't focus, when you can't organize or prioritize, it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. And how you manage those frustrations is also a part of your ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I actually just got off a call with one of my clients and she and I worked on her schedule a lot. And I think she mastered her schedule. She thought she mastered her schedule. And then she came to me crying today. And she's like, I can't get anything done. And she's like, I don't think I've mastered my schedule. I said, yes, you did. You're just in a very interesting transition in your life where you're considering leaving your job and then you associate that with a fear of failure. And then you are playing all these stories out in your head. You have no motivation to do the work. And those are your emotions that right now are not in check. So you're not going to be motivated to do anything.
So do you think people with ADHD struggle more with regulating their emotions because of those other executive function deficits, that because it is so extreme, or is it something that really stands alone with ADHD that it doesn't necessarily have to be tied to executive function?
That's a good question. I think it's a mix of both. I think it has to do with regulating executive functions, but I also think it has to do with our past. A lot of individuals with ADHD have trauma and PTSD and bullying situations and, being told that they're not smart enough, they're not good enough, they're just lazy. And then they have to prove themselves when they're older. And a lot of us prove ourselves at work and we identify with work. And if we don't perform to someone else's standards, then it's a personal attack to us. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
It is interesting. And then we beat ourselves up with all the negative self-talk.
Absolutely.
Which then makes you less productive and less motivated.
Absolutely. And then it is. It's that negative thought loop. And 80% of humans' thoughts are negative. Mm-hmm. And 95% are repetitive. So now you add ADHD and rumination and trauma, it's constant. So you actually need to be proactive in your thinking and your visualization and your growth mindset and not taking things so personally, like everyone's attacking us, and creating a space for ourselves where we can be in a place of calm so we can regulate our emotions.
I think that's too why so many undiagnosed ADHD, you know, teens, middle school students, adults come to us already diagnosed with depression, anxiety.
That's what's
most obvious, right? That's what everyone sees. Those are the symptoms that are easiest to describe.
Absolutely. So when I was growing up, I had seen several therapists, and I was diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder. And at times in my life, I had some mild depression, but that was before I was diagnosed with ADHD. Now my psychiatrist is like, I think you just have ADHD. I'm like, no, I still have anxiety. I definitely still have anxiety. And yeah, it might manifest from my ADHD, but I also have anxiety in other areas of my life. So now I have generalized anxiety disorder and ADHD.
That makes sense. So what, when you're working with your clients and they get to that, you know, place where they are having those, not irrational, because they are very rational, but those, when the emotions are starting to get in the way. So I know you just went through a whole list of things, but like, what, how do you work with them? What are some suggestions and some strategies you do with your clients to help kind of bring them back to center and help refocus and remotivate them?
Yeah. So I think what you were trying to say is the intentional versus unintentional thoughts, right?
Right.
So intentional thoughts are thoughts that just happen to us. And there's nothing that, like, we can't control those thoughts. So you're thinking something right now. You're thinking something right now. I'm thinking something right now. And I didn't know that I was going to think that, but it just happened. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's the unintentional thoughts, which are the thoughts that we can create for ourselves. So yeah, there are like CBT strategies where you can take your negative thoughts and you can then feel it, name it, and switch it to an unintentional thought that is more of a growth mindset thought. And then that creates different action. So that's one way of doing it. And I know that Brooke Castillo talks a lot about that in her self-coaching 101, and Katie Byron, CBT specialists do it. A lot of people have implemented that in their coaching now.
So is it kind of taking the negative and processing it so that you can then turn it into a motivator or a positive?
Yeah. So it's like recognizing that you're having a negative thought and that, that negative thought is not real. So you're deciphering between, is that a story that I've created or is that fact? If it's a story that I created, let me rename and reassign that story. And then a different action and solution will happen. So maybe I'm looking at you guys and saying, oh, they're so not interested in what I'm trying to say right now. And then of course, that is going to make me feel like I am going to shut down. I'm going to freeze. I'm going to stumble over my words. So naming that as, this is an unrealistic thought. This is a story. I'm just storytelling or I'm predicting. But how about I think of it as, I don't know what they're thinking because I can't read your minds. So I'm just going to go and, you know, take this as an experience and talk and see what comes out of it. So that's the reframing piece.
I like that.
That makes sense. And I like that strategy because that helps with really the action part that comes after it, what you're going to do with that emotion. And we do feel emotions, I believe us with ADHD, I think we do feel all emotions much more intensely.
Yes.
And so it's how you act on those emotions, which if you have impulsivity like I do, sometimes I'm not thinking before I'm acting. So taking the time to think about my thoughts, those that metacognition, thinking about your thinking, yes, and then reframing it into something positive, it sounds like it could really change the action that I take.
Absolutely.
Make me pause so that I don't have as impulsive of a reaction to the emotion.
Yes, yes. And people are like, well, I'm impulsive, so I can't control it. But I appreciate what you said. I mean, taking that pause is so huge, whether it be waiting 24 hours to have that conversation where you think that someone's attacking you, and processing it. And again, writing it down and differentiating between the fact or the story that you're telling and seeing if that emotion that you had initially is actually something that you're still feeling that next day. And usually it's not. Mm-hmm. Or doing a pattern interrupt and going outside, changing the room that you're in, having a different visual presentation in front of you, because that can shift your focus and that can be a pattern interrupt. Breathing, doing, I don't know if you've heard of the Wonder Woman pose or the Superman pose where you put your hands on your hips. So all of those things can help you get out of that thought process, at least temporarily.
Right. Now, it sounds like to me that is a strategy that's probably more beneficial for someone who is older, like a high school, college student, adult, someone who is a little bit more self-aware. Mm-hmm. But what about a young child? Like we have parents that come in and their child, you know, they said they can't control their emotions. They have temper tantrums and explode and have these outbursts. Yeah. Are there any strategies that you can think of off the top of your head that might be something to help little ones with emotional regulation?
Yes, definitely. So one of my coaches, Dia, she's an executive function expert. I probably should have had her on this too with me. And she talks about the zones of regulation. And she has a picture, you can find them online. And it helps the child identify what feeling they're having. So are you in the red zone? Are you in the green zone? Are you in the yellow zone? And if you're in that red zone where you're fired up, like, is it a good thing to go and say that thing or do that thing? So identifying their feelings, being able to name their feelings by just looking at a color and then taking a step back. So that's just one thing. Mm-hmm. Another thing is that kids need a calm kit. So if you're at home, have some sort of safety unit or safe place that your child can go to and just get their emotions out, whether it's punching a pillow or walking in circles or the stress ball or, you know, punching a punching bag or whatever, or there's, you know, it's a conversation that happens before your child is riled up with emotions and you have that safe place for them that they know they can go to.
Mm, that's a great idea. So you kind of pre-teach when you're feeling this way or when you're feeling like you're in the red or the orange zone, you should go to this safe place and you can do this, you can do that, you can do this.
Yes. Or and you design this. You design it with them in mind. Sure. So what feels good to you when you're upset? Let's come up with these things together so they can own it as well. And that's something that we teach in our parent coaching as well. In the classroom, as a former special education teacher, when my students were riled up, we had signals. So, you know, they would either like put a color on their desk or, you know, write me a note and put it somewhere, or, you know, they would have to get up. Regardless, like I knew that they were having a hard time emotionally regulating. And at that point, I would allow them to take the bathroom pass, walk to the bathroom, come back, drink some water, take a break, you know, scream if they needed to scream. That sometimes feels better. Take a note to another teacher just to get out of their seat and move around and wiggle, whatever it is.
I think too, you know, that reaction either by a parent, a teacher, a friend, what, you know, for children and adults, I think also can really help because the feedback you get, you know, if you are throwing a temper tantrum or you're really upset, you know, the feedback you get from somebody can really help either escalate or de-escalate those feelings. And quickly, sometimes, you know, the right person on the other side can help you realize, okay, this is irrational. This is not, you know, their fault. This is me. I need to, you know, it's that feedback. And so those kinds of things are so helpful. And I think just that's where we talk a lot about grace, you know, giving grace, understanding that what they're doing isn't on purpose. They're not bad, mean kids or cranky people.
No.
Just their reaction to the environment for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And just
maybe it's a sensory thing.
Exactly. I mean, having that understanding of, okay, you know what? I see this is not good for you. Let's switch gears. Let's do something else. Helping them, you know, regulate that a little bit from the response can be huge because, you know, oftentimes kids, especially when they're together, they'll get each other riled up. They'll fight back. They'll punt, you know, whatever. And now you've escalated into something so much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I actually ironically just got off a call today with a parent who had attended our free conference, the ADHD Ed Camp. And she was like, I have a 16-year-old son who now is in therapy and it's just so frustrating. I can't get him to get out of the door on time in the morning. And he's just, you know, not organized, this and that. Anyway, it's not only about having that safe space, but having collaborative problem solving between the parent and the child and doing it at a time, like you said, beforehand. And then if he or she is having that emotional response, letting them go through that and then having a conversation afterwards when things are calm, saying, hey, what happens? Like, let's talk about that.
All right. How can we do that differently?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Walk us through it.
Is emotion regulation, because I always think of it as, you know, obviously, you know, the temper tantrums and the getting upset and the initial negative stuff, but can sometimes kids get like, is that kind of that overexcited or the, you know, the inappropriate laughter or to me, that's still regulating your emotions, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
There's even, I think there are individuals that are under-regulating or under-emotional. They're not, it's whether your emotions are appropriate for the circumstances you're in. So I think there are some individuals that even struggle with having an appropriate level of emotion to a stimuli or to their environment or something.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you know individuals with ADHD are 30% less socially and emotionally
mature,
thank you, than people their own age. So yes, it's typical.
Yeah.
So sometimes their response is just inappropriate, whether it's too much emotion or not enough emotion.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Acting like you don't care or appearing as if you don't care can be just as harmful or interpreted just as negatively.
Definitely.
Yes.
And I think, like you said, or I think, Lori, you were talking about the feedback that the other person gives you can make a big difference. And I think about in school, when I was a teacher, we oftentimes learned as far as positive behavior management, you try to remain emotionless when you're talking to the child who's escalated. So I think parents and teachers both, it's something really important to keep in mind that in the heat of the moment, you can't let your frustration with the child or with the individual or your spouse or whoever it is get you so riled up that you can't talk through it in a positive, concrete way and process through the scenario or the more appropriate action. So it is important to remain emotionless when you're talking to that individual about what they need to do, right?
Yes. Emotionless, calm. And whether you're a teacher or a parent or a friend or a significant other, you got to do what makes you calm. Because if your whole focus is on my child or my student or my partner is not behaving the way that I want them to, and this is out of control. Like if your only focus is that, then that's what you're going to focus on and it grows. So you need to fill your buckets in other ways so you can show up for them when that occurs.
Well, I think too, that adds to that loop of negative. So now I've disappointed my mom or my spouse or whatever. So now, because I did that, now I'm beating myself up.
Then they get more emotional. Right. And that's when the executive functions shut down, because they freeze, they fight, they fib, they flight. All of that emotion that is experienced, and on top of that, with someone with a negative response to it, it's just, a recipe.
It's a recipe for disaster. Yeah, recipe for disaster. It's terrible. Yeah. And I think that's what we see so often with parents, is that their emotions escalate and they yell more or get more angry or more frustrated. Mm-hmm. Kind of like you were saying, that the 16-year-old that wouldn't get out the door. If you've got a mom that's like, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
You're not helping. Mm-hmm. Right? That's
not helping. That's like telling someone to focus when they can't focus.
Right.
I mean, exactly. I just literally talked about that this weekend. I was at my stepson's soccer game and one of the parents was screaming at the kids, "Focus." Oh. Okay. What does that mean?
Right.
Right.
I'm going to focus. Right. Thank you so much for reminding me.
Right. And what about feeling excessively overwhelmed or excessively stressed or excessively anxious? Because I think that difficulty regulating that emotional aspect is really the cause of not being able to initiate some tasks or to remember something you've just heard or execute, a plan. I know that at times I struggle with feeling excessively stressed or overwhelmed by situations that really should be manageable. Right. So what about individuals that get that feeling of being overly anxious or overly overwhelmed?
There's just too much to do.
Yeah, there's just too much.
There's too much. I'm overwhelmed. I'm shutting down.
Yeah, a lot of my clients come to me and they're like, okay, I need to get these 100 things done today and then 99 tomorrow and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, we all have the same 24 hours in the day. I'm not really sure how you think you're getting this done, but surprise me,
Right.
So I think we take on way more than we can chew as individuals with ADHD, because again, we are masking, we are trying to people please, we say yes to too many things, and sometimes we don't recognize the amount of time that it takes to do something or all the steps that go into the thing. So there's this layover of things. But also, I think a lot of times it's the analysis paralysis of not making a decision that can stress us out so much. When we have something like a transition, whether we want to break up with someone or we want to find a new job or we're having a difficult time in a social situation, that's when we have a difficult time executing. So it's not always that there's too much on our plate. It's just we haven't gotten closure on a situation.
And again, that's where those emotions come in, because then again, it's that negative self-talk. Like, why can't I just make a decision? Why can't I just pull the trigger? Why can't I do this? And you're beating yourself up and feeling like you're not, sense of inadequacy for sure.
Totally. And it's that negativity bias that individuals with ADHD deal with so often. And we thrive with external reinforcement, but also it's important for us to know why we are doing certain things as well and why we're motivated towards things. So eventually we can stop and, with the help of someone else or the help of ourselves, to recognize, okay, we did that thing. Look at this. So we're not so gap focused on what we didn't do or what we still need to accomplish.
That's a good point. I think we don't praise ourselves enough for the things we do get done and what we are able to accomplish. So that is a really good point. That's probably something really profound that all individuals with ADHD need to do more of, is giving ourselves grace, but also patting ourselves on the back and praising and rewarding ourselves for the things we do get done and accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're really bad at that.
We are really bad at that.
Well, we act as like we're driven on, exactly. We act as we're driven on a motor sometimes. And that can just make us think about, okay, what's the next thing I have to do? What's the next thing I have to do? And not just stopping, like you said, even if it's just a pat on the back and saying, whoa, that was a goal for me that I was working on all year. Mm-hmm. And I just got that done in like 5 minutes. Can you believe it? Like, I don't care how it got done. It got done. So let's recognize that. Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, we're talking so much about emotion regulation in individuals with ADHD. And through your training and your reading and research and learning and whatnot, has there ever been anyone to give insight into why the emotional aspects are not part of the diagnostic criteria for ADHD? Have you ever heard anything about that?
So when I went to the ADHD International Conference three or four years ago, it was in Philly. We had many psychologists and psychiatrists talking about how it's not in the DSM-5, executive dysfunction's not in the DSM-5, emotional regulation's not in the DSM-5, rejection sensitive dysphoria. I know there's a lot of talk about that, not in the DSM-5. So I don't know why.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not.
It's just, it's interesting because I do think that, you know, it is such a prevalent characteristic of ADHD that, you know, it just, you think it would be part of the diagnostic criteria. So it is fascinating.
It is fascinating.
There's a reason, I'm sure. I'm sure it's a good one, but
I would like to.
Well, maybe when they come out with the DSM-6, perhaps that will be on it.
Perhaps.
Fingers crossed. Right. Fingers
crossed. Let's talk to all the psychologists out there.
Right. Do you have any like books or resources that you would recommend to people to learn more about executive function, emotion regulation, those kinds of things?
Absolutely. So Thomas Brown, Dr. Thomas Brown, who we spoke about, he has a book called Attention Deficit Disorder. And that's very helpful for me. It's like a guide for how your brain works, how executive functions work, what tools to use. But it talks a lot about the science behind it. I also like Healing ADD by Dr. Daniel Amen. ADHD 2.0.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
So, yes. And then I also have a course called Healing ADHD through Emotional Regulation Work.
Oh, really?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's a virtual course?
So we actually are just, it's virtual, but it's led by a coach. So it's live and it's a 6-week course with 8 people. And we're finishing tomorrow our beta program of it, but we've gotten really amazing reviews, 6 lessons. It's all about controlling the trauma and the stories that you tell yourself in the past and healing the past.
That's fascinating. Awesome.
So if we have people that are interested in participating in that, how do they find that out? How do they get in touch with you?
Sure. So they could just go to our website, coachingwithbrooke.com, or email us at info@coachingwithbrooke. And we're coming up with a new cohort in a couple of months. So we already have a wait list for that, but we're happy to open up 2 classes, one with our coach Dia, who I mentioned before, executive function, and one with our coach Kelly, who is doing it now with me. But we've got an amazing response. We talk about bringing on the dopamine, healing the past, not being a victim to our circumstances, growth mindset, and just building and stop taking things so personally because, you know, we do. And just building our emotional regulation toolbox with the strategies that we talk about in each session. So at the end of the course, every individual can walk away with a piece of paper, with a toolbox, each lesson that they wrote down the strategies that have worked for them. And when they're presented with difficult situations, they're like, wait, this worked for me in the past. I'm going to use this. So it's a new way of showing up and changing the neuroplasticity in your brain. and rewiring your brain.
Take that course. I know. I think I need to take that course. Like,
you might be seeing us.
Yeah, that's
thank you.
Awesome. That's awesome.
A great resource.
We'll include your the link to your website in our show notes,
thank you.
And then also the books that you mentioned. We'll include links to each of those as well, so people, if they're interested, can check those out. We probably need
thank
to get the brown
much.
Book for the
yes,
office. Just
we
FYI,
should
because it is a great. Yeah, book. I love that, and I
it's
love
like a Bible.
It yeah, is,
right.
We just have go ADHD through that anytime.
2.0. We do have the ADHD 2.0, but we need to get the brown book attention.
Yeah, I like the 2.0. I like the 2.0 where he talks about the DMN, and but you know the brown book really goes into the executive functions and the science, and it's a guide. You can okay. open it up at any chapter and uh-huh. find out about something that you need.
It's a great
that
resource.
That is awesome. Well, thank you for being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for
this
having me.
Awesome.
Yes.
This has been a great way to wrap up the week.
Definitely.
Or the series.
The series. Yeah.
Thank you. And I think it definitely just kind of puts a bow on it because it really is tied to all those other executive functions, right? I mean, uh-huh. it is. There's emotion in every one of those.
Uh-huh.
And so
thank you
so much for giving us your time and for sharing your insights.
Yes.
And
thank you for finding me.
Absolutely. So you do individual and group coaching, correct?
Yes. So we are 8 ADHD coaches currently. Wow. And we work with ages 8 to 80 students and adults. And we do parent coaching for all student ages, even less than 8. And we have individual and group coaching for adults. Currently, we only have individual coaching for students, but that will be changing. We have several courses, and our signature process is 3C activation. So it takes people from the chaos of their ADHD, managing that, getting rid of the negative habits, bringing on some positive habits slowly but surely, going through different time management strategies, and then stretching yourself to a place of greater confidence. So that's our process that we trickle in all areas, students, adults, individual, and group. But yes, it's been awesome. A business for 4 years, and our mission and our vision is to impact 10 million individuals with ADHD.
Wow.
Wow.
That's
for you.
Awesome. Yeah. Good for you. That's
that
a great
awesome.
Mission.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
If
you guys have any questions for Brooke, you can reach her through her website and we'll include that information. If you have questions for us or suggestions for future episodes, letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com is the best way to reach us, or Abby, they can go to our website.
Our podcast website is ltldpodcast.com. And there you can find all of our episodes. You can find them chronologically or grouped by categories. We even have a resources section now that has amazing, amazing resources and tools for individuals or those living with individuals with various learning disabilities and ADHD.
So thank you so much for being here today. We will see you guys back for the next episode. Thanks, Brooke.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.